Hi, I'm Sam Smeltzer, and I'm an HR intuitive and healer. And you're listening to the Heart of It podcast, where we chat about what matters most in the world of HR, the people. And I want to thank you for joining me this week for our newest episode. I'm so grateful that you're here whenever you are choosing to listen throughout your busy week. I know that you have lots of options, and just honored that you're here. And it's because of all of you that we do this every week, and we have been. You know, we're creeping on through the year. You know, this is the end of August. And now we're almost to the point where we've done 2 years of weekly episodes, releasing 52 episodes a year, which was a goal I had last year, and now we are conquering it this year. And even more amazing is it's 2 years almost solid guests. I mean, yes, I've been doing a couple of episodes solo, but for the most part, it has been guests. If you are an old school listener from back in the day when we were originally Random Ramblings and you miss those, then you want to sign up for our newsletter called Letters from the Heart. I'm sure the link will be in the show notes. But part of that is I do weekly or bi-weekly heart chats. So there's actually a video where what was captured originally in Random Ramblings is now there. And also, speaking of little minor announcements, I want to say one more reminder about the upcoming Grateful Heart Showcase, which is a special segment we'll be doing in November where we will be sharing with you individuals, practitioners in HR, people-driven practitioners who are doing amazing things that are manifesting change. You know, as we've been talking about this series coming up, if someone comes to mind, I want you to fill out that nomination form. We are accepting nominations until September 1st, so it's right around the corner. So fill out the nomination form and submit them. Let us share them with the world. Okay, so today, what are we talking about? Today, my guest is Micah Lawrence, and he is amazing. He is amazing. Let me tell you a little bit about Micah. Micah is a corporate management dropout turned leadership, relationship, team development coach. Based in Austin, Texas, Micah is a Gallup-certified Clifton Strengths coach and believer in the power of positive psychology. He has nearly a decade of facilitation experience with an emphasis on strengths-based development workshops for teams from startups to Fortune 500 companies. So the book Strengths Finder, has been out for a long time. It had a lot of buzz out in the corporate world. In fact, we'll hear from Micah that it was during that buzz that he was first introduced to it. It's an amazing tool, but like many assessments out there, we're not sure what to do with it or what's next. So much so that I kind of was guilty of putting it in a bucket of thinking that it was not useful. So I really went into this interview a little bit skeptic. But with that in mind, Micah had asked if possibly I would be willing to expose my StrengthFinder results and he do kind of a mini coaching session on me, which I'm always a fan of free coaching for the episodes, so I obviously said yes. What happened in this episode is game-changing, and it shows you not only how artful Micah is as a facilitator, but also, you know, there's so many amazing tools out there, but if you have a drive to apply it and really make it useful about what we are learning about ourselves and each other, it can really evolve where you are, where your team is. And Micah has taken that on with StrengthsFinder. So completely blown away by this episode. And I think you're going to really enjoy it while also being a little bit vulnerable and transparent as we talk about my strengths as well as some of my struggles, which are still strengths too, as you'll hear Micah talk about. So here we go. Enjoy. Hello, everyone. everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Heart of It podcast. I am so grateful that you are tuning in and listening and really excited for this episode because I think the tables are going to get turned a little bit. And instead of me interrogating my guest, he's probably going to interrogate me and has a report that probably gives him more insight into me than most guests have before coming into the show. But before we get to that, Micah, do you want to say hello to the guests and introduce yourself?
Yes. Hey, everybody. My name is Micah Lawrence. I'm excited to be here today. I love the HR profession. I love talking to leaders and HR professionals, and I'm excited to spend some time with you, Sam. Even just from our pre-show conversation, I can tell we're going to get along great.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this. So it's fascinating to me because when we were talking about bringing you on the show, the conversation came up about the Clifton Strengths Assessment. It's something that's talked about quite heavily. It's become very popular. It's one I would say is in one of those top assessments that leaders are talking about in their workplaces. And so because of that, the question that came to me from my team was, Is this overdone? Like, do we want someone on here for it? And I said, well, no, because I still don't think that people know what to do with it. Like, it's this great tool. It provides insight. And I don't even know if I know what to do with it. So maybe it's worth talking to Micah. So I know that this is definitely in your wheelhouse. Can you share with the listeners a little bit about your background and what you do and even why are you an expert on this assessment?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we'll rewind about 7 years. I lived in San Antonio. I worked for a Fortune 100 company in the financial services industry, and I did mostly strategy work for about 7 years, and I would facilitate strategic planning or do business architecture, and I had this very, very, very corporate lifestyle and corporate work. And 1 year there was, and actually over a few years, the Clifton Strengths book, or it was called Strengths Finder, was being passed around the company. Like, it was popping up everywhere where everybody was taking this assessment. In the back of the Strengths Finder books, there's a free code to get your top five. And a bunch of teams were doing these. They would get their results. My team did it. We got our results. We were reading the results like, whoa, this is totally me. This is very cool. And we'd put them up on our cubicle and then we'd never talk about it again. It was just the one time and then never talk about it again. And I was looking around like, why aren't we using this? And it bothered me so much that I kind of took it upon myself to develop a workshop and some team builders around, like, now that we know our strengths, let's talk about what they mean and how they're different from one another. And over the next 7 years, I started volunteering my time outside of my regular job responsibilities. This was not my job in the least. And because I loved it so much and I was learning about the strengths and starting to internalize them and seeing the benefit of it in teams and for teams, people started coming to me after some time and asking, like, hey, will you come do that for our team? And still, I would do this on the side of my regular job until at some point, my wife, who was a great kind of reasoning influence in my ear, said, "What? Why don't you just do this full time? This is what you spend your nights and weekends on because you love it. Why don't you do that?" So after 11 years in my corporate job, I quit and decided to start my own business doing Clifton Strengths coaching for individuals and teams. So I work with a lot of professionals who are trying to achieve career growth or career progress. I work with couples a lot, and we bring in the Clifton Strengths assessment, and we talk about, it's so fun for me to talk with couples because I'll get both of their reports and I'll put them side by side. And without knowing either of them, I can predict where there might be areas of tension or friction in their relationship. And they're like, whoa, how did you do that? And this is, let me tell you all about it. And so they have stories and they want to share, this is what's going on in our relationship. And so we can start to understand how differences, even in parenting and couples, can be an advantage and an opportunity for partnership. And then my favorite thing to do is workshops with teams. I'll come in and do team builders or multiple team development workshops over a 6 month or a 9 month period, just to help people work better together with the people that they work with and understand that, again, differences are an advantage, not a problem to be solved. So it was kind of this evolution that I didn't plan for, but it's been over that 7 year period that I gained this expertise in the Clifton Strengths and started to really help people know, not just like this is a cool assessment and how interesting, but now how do I put this in practice and make it work for me?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a much needed evolution that you went through, because as a fellow trainer, you know, personalities is always this fun thing. And I blame all those horrible magazine quizzes back in the day that everyone wants to take these assessments and learn about themselves. And, but one of my biggest pet peeves was when I would go do team workshops is they want to learn about themselves, but they wouldn't want to learn about what to do with that. Like they want to talk about me, 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 me. It's like we condition them with Myers-Briggs and all these things, DISC. Oh, this is me and I'm learning so much about myself. But the beauty is when we can connect that to everybody else and how we engage with the world. So I love that you're doing those things. And I love that you've built a business around that. It's much needed. And I hope more trainers go that way. You should do more train the trainers to help to help them do that, because I think that's invaluable. And the way that you're applying it directly to relationships, I always say, you know, anything that we do in the corporate environment around relationships, we should be able to apply in a marriage counseling scenario, because that's the number one relationship if you are married. And if you don't think that, then there's other problems at hand. But that should be your deepest, most intimate relationship in your life. So these things should all work there. So I love that you're using that to deepen those relationships.
Well, and what's so interesting about that is that most of the time, that's not where it starts. Oftentimes, I'll be working one-on-one with a leader or with an individual contributor who's just working on their development plan. And often, just recently, I did this with a leader. We're talking about how their strengths contribute to their leadership style and their leadership approach and how they lead their team and how their team having different strengths might mean that they lead certain people differently and that the way that they would like to be led isn't necessarily how others want to be led. And as we're talking and we're going through their results, this leader was like, okay, I have to have my wife take this assessment too. It's like, I need her to know these things about me and I need to know more about her. And it's so funny how often that's how I get into couples coaching. It starts with one individual in a corporate setting who pulls in their wife, has their spouse, and it's not always the husband asking for the wife. It's often the wife bringing in the husband. And it ends up being a conversation that we have them take it and they just join us for a couple of sessions. And we work together through not even his work or her work development. It's all about how do we partner better as a couple? How do we increase love and tolerance as a couple? And how do we parent our children when there are children involved in a way that leverages people's natural strengths as parents and plays to the strengths of our children, which is an interesting concept too.
Wow. Fascinating. Yes. And obviously we could talk about this all day, but what I promise the listeners today is that they're going to get some insight on this assessment and what actually gets revealed, because I think for the most part, people do it and they hear it about themselves, but I think there's a real benefit when you hear what are the results of someone else. So I'm going to put myself out there and Mike is going to go ahead and reveal what my results share and kind of, I don't know, you're the expert here, so I'm not going to try to predict what you're going to do for me. I'm just going to be quiet and let you work your magic.
Awesome. Well, the beauty of it is I don't know what we're going to do for you either. And that's the power of coaching, is it's not me and it's not just you. It's the partnership. And that's, we'll kind of figure that out together.
Yes. That's okay. Beautifully said. We should put that on the billboard somewhere.
We should. It probably is on a billboard somewhere. Okay. So a little bit of background too, before we dig into your actual strengths, just so that you and others understand some of the basics. The Clifton Strengths tool or the assessment is based on positive psychology. It's this idea that we're going to focus on what's right about people instead of focusing on what's wrong with them. In traditional personal development, it's the opposite. We used to do, and before positive psychology or strength psychology, we used to do deficiency-based development. What's wrong with you? What are your weaknesses? And we're going to address those weaknesses to make you more well-rounded. And the strengths-based approach is less about being well-rounded and more about leaning into what you're already best at so that you can become world-class, so that you can become really excellent at those things. And you still want to acknowledge what your weaknesses are and where you're low in your strengths so that you can partner with others and be find complementary partners that can really complement what you're good at with what they're good at. And it kind of takes us out of this individual mindedness into team mindedness. It's not just about me being well-rounded. It's about us being the best that we can be as a team, because I'm going to bring this that I'm best at, and you're going to bring this that you're best at, and we're going to be better as a team, which is a cool concept. Now, the strengths assessment, when you take it, they're actually 34 of these strengths total. And every single one of them has been studied. So over decades of research has been studied to have been used for success. None of them are bad. They've all been leveraged for good and for success in professionals. The way that your report comes out is it's ordered from 1 to 34, meaning that your strongest strength is number 1 and your lowest strength is number 34. And Gallup will define them in kind of groups. Your top 10 or so of your strengths are really your dominant strengths. These are your zone of genius. They're the strengths that come so naturally to you, you don't even have to try. Your bottom 5 are your lesser strengths. They don't call those weaknesses, they call them lesser strengths, because it's just implying that you don't think like people who have those strengths would think. It's a different worldview. They're things that don't come naturally to you. But they're not necessarily weaknesses. We'll talk about weaknesses a little bit as we get into your strengths. And then the middle ground, everything from about 11 to 30, those are your, or 29, 30, those are your supporting strengths. Any one of them you might leverage at any given time, but maybe they don't come as naturally to you, or the environment and the circumstances need to be right. So that's one way to understand just how to interpret your report when you first get it, just to know what you're even looking at. Does that help you?
Yeah, definitely. As you were saying that, I was all like, what? Well, let me look at this again from just knowing that now. And, that definitely makes a lot of sense. And I'll also say, Micah had asked me if I had taken this before, and I did not know. I signed in and I had. So this is from 2018. And I did look at it and I was like, I think it's still pretty on point. So I think that's interesting too, to have the report from then, but still knowing it's serving a purpose.
Yeah. Gallup would say that too. I've actually met with and coached a few people who, because a decade passed, they're like, I'm going to take it again. And it's amazing how little it changes. Every once in a while, the strengths will move position within the top 10, but they're still in the top 10. And when I coach people, I don't distinguish between what's number 9 and what's number 6 and what's number 4. There might be some emphasis on your top 3 to 5 strengths. Those should be really powerful for you, but all 10 of them are your dominant strengths. And so I kind of treat them equally. We'll assume that they're all very strong and accessible to you as your strengths. One other thing that I think would be helpful before we actually talk about the specific strengths is I'd like to ask if there are one or two goals or obstacles that are especially relevant to you right now that you're working toward or working through.
So I would say I'll give you two. I'll give you one that's more probably personal and one that's more professional. And I don't know how to exactly articulate this, but professionally, this will not be new to the listeners, but we just went through a massive rebranding and fully stepped into helping HR practitioners fully as a business. With that transition comes, moving service lines and sources of income different. So I'm in that transition phase. And so I think my goal is a combination of trying to be patient, but also trying to make sure that I do what's best for the business to materialize the financial support that is needed to sustain our business, because I just abandoned everything from before and now went to this whole new model. So that's number one. And then number two is, I was just talking about this in our team meeting. I notoriously am horrible with my schedule. I like to pack it in. And to the point that I get sick. So last week I had a cold, because my body will actually shut me down when I do that. And that was because I worked 2 weeks consecutively with really no actual restorative rest day. And I do it And like, you know, my previous coach would say I self-sabotage myself and do it over and over again. But I'm trying really to be intentional about how to set better boundaries from a scheduling perspective so that I can be at my best when I'm working with clients, because that's really where it causes me pain.
Cool. Oh, man, that's so good. And even just looking at your strengths, I have some thoughts that we can talk about. What, one quick clarification, when you were talking about kind of your rebranding, you said something about transitioning your service lines. What does that look like?
So we were basically a traditional HR consulting firm where you would go in and do hiring, firing, all that kind of stuff. And now we're moving into coaching HR practitioners to be these strategic partners and providing for themselves, as well as healing those practitioners. So we're doing restorative practices with burnout. But my target market went from everyone who has a business and the leaders of those business to really speaking to the HR professionals who have been the listeners of this podcast for 5 years. So they basically, they knew this evolution was coming way before I did.
Yeah. Because that's what they wanted.
Yes.
That's what they wanted all along from you.
Buy stuff. No, I'm cool. Just kidding. Totally kidding.
Yeah. It's a little plug. Okay. That's really helpful. We'll hopefully bring those into the conversation as we talk about cool. This. So are you ready to dive into your results a little bit?
Let's do this.
Okay. What I told you, so I mentioned this before we started recording, that I could take an hour just on probably just a couple of these. And I want to talk about most of your top 10 and a couple of your bottom five. And because we don't have time for that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do kind of a rapid fire going through some of these strengths and what they mean. And if you have something to jot down notes to yourself, I'd love to know which resonate with you, like which three or four resonate with you most, so that we can dig into those.
Yeah.
Because some might be more relevant to your goals and your obstacles right now.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. Now, the other thing, you showed me your paper. Good. The other thing to keep in mind, and this is a really critical concept, and I mentioned I was going to bring this up, is the weaknesses idea. All of these strengths, so we're going to start with strategic. That's your number one strength. And I'm going to use this to illustrate. Actually, I wonder if I might use your number four, because that's a great example of this. So I'm going to pop around a little bit just as we talk about things and they become relevant. But I'm going to talk about your number four strength, which is adaptability. We'll go back and start from the beginning, but I want to illustrate this idea about strengths and weaknesses. The Gallup actually doesn't start with the term strength when they talk about these themes. Your top 10 themes are truly talents. They're natural patterns of thought, feeling, or behavior. They're not good or bad, they're neutral. It's just the way that you think, the way that you feel, and the way that you behave. Now, when we apply the way that we feel or the way that we think to our behaviors, we act sometimes in ways in which that talent can manifest for good. And we use that talent to our advantage and to our own benefit and to the benefit of others. That's a healthy, mature application of talent. And that's what Gallup calls a strength. When we use it well, when we use it in a mature way and in a well-developed way, that's where it becomes a strength. Now, if you think about this on a spectrum, talent is in the middle and strength is on one end. The other end of the spectrum is weakness. Sometimes the very talent that served us in a good way and in a mature, well-developed way, can sometimes get the best of us. It can be overused or misused and can be a hindrance to our success. And it comes from the very same talent. And I know this in people because sometimes people will look at their results for the first time that we talk about it, and they'll point at one and they'll say, that's not a strength. And I'll ask them about it, like, why did you say that? And they're like, because that gets me in trouble all the time. So all of a sudden, we have something to talk about. When we look at this spectrum, that strength is probably being used in an immature, raw way, and we need to work on developing it so that we're using it in a mature way. You started laughing, Sam. I got to know, what was on your mind when I said
that? Oh, I just, you know, looking at, you know, some of these, and I know, like, we're going to dive in deeper to what they actually mean, but, like, you know, number three is responsibility. And, you know, I tie that to ownership and the whole thing during the whole COVID thing. I am a rule follower and very quick. Like everyone knows that I released a book during COVID and I was really sad that I couldn't have a book launch event
Yeah.
And so my close friends, like when we were able to start coming up, they planned this huge surprise party amongst them, which I've never had a surprise party. So that was a big deal. Well, our governor changed the rules like the Friday before the surprise. And so I couldn't get away from it. And they all knew this. Like they all knew, like Sam is such a rule follower. She's not going to be able to be, like go with the ploy that's getting her to the surprise party. And so I basically like got in a fight with my husband, who was the decoy. And he was just like, you know what? Just forget about it. It's a surprise party. It's, you know, it's just, it's okay. And he's like, you're always,
you have to come.
And I'm like, I'm so sorry that I can't like, I dissect all those things. And from an HR perspective, like HR laws, and I have physical anxiety when I, so.
Awesome. Oh, Sam. Okay. Because you brought this up, we're going to use responsibility as the example. Okay. That's where we're going to start. Okay. So your number three strength, responsibility, is a beautiful strength. It's one that these are people who have high responsibility take psychological ownership of what they say they're going to do. If I said I'm going to do it, I will sacrifice anything that I need to sacrifice to follow through on my commitments. It might be my time, might be my money, might be energy, might be sleep. If I said I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. So these are people that are very dependable and that generally have a really high standard of quality. Not only are they going to do it, but because they see it as a reflection of who they are, they're going to do it well. I can't say that I'm going to do this thing and not put my all into it. So for them, often it's all or nothing. I'm either going to give 100% or zero. And because I committed to it, that means I owe it to them to give 100%. And so there's often this ethical leaning that people with high responsibility, their boundary is black and white. It's either ethical or it's not. It's either right or it's not. And there's no blurry line for people with responsibility. For others, it's like, well, I decided I don't want to wear a mask, so it's fine. And that's my choice. But for people with high responsibility, it's like, no, but that's wrong. And so it may not be, you may not share the same values as other people, but when it comes to your values, it's black and white. There's no gray. So that like this commitment to what's right for you is a matter of integrity. And you will not sacrifice your integrity, even if it's convenient or somebody else asks you to. And I actually, you made me think of a story of someone that I coached who's also a friend of mine who said that he started getting into geocaching and he took his family on a walk. They were in New York City and they stopped by this cache and it was right off of this path where there were a bunch of people walking by. And one of the rules that he committed to in the community for geocaching was not to let other people see when they find a cache. It's just like, that's one of the basic rules. Because then somebody else didn't work for it and they saw it and he committed to it. And so he's sitting there on the side of this path waiting for everybody to pass until before he felt comfortable getting the cache. And his wife is like, what are we doing here? Why are we still waiting? And he's like, well, I committed to the community that I wouldn't show other people where this cash is. They waited for an hour for people to pass because it was the right thing to do. It was, as far as he was concerned, there was no gray area. It was black and white. I said I would do this and I'm not gonna sacrifice our convenience and go against something that I committed to. So what resonates with you about that as a starting point?
I mean, that's 100%. You know, that's what I loved initially about HR was employment law and how I could make things black and white and decide what is right according to the law and what is not. It's exactly as you're speaking and you're sharing that story. I mean, that is me every single day. And I sometimes do get crap about it because people just want me to be a little more relax sometimes, because sometimes it will be something so small. So like I mentioned that I got sick with a cold last week and I'm a medical Qigong therapist. And by our ethics standards for professionals, if you're not 100% well, you will not treat somebody. And so last week, even though you have this annoying cold that we're taught before pandemic to just, you know, work through, I called and canceled my patients and I moved them to this week. And they asked me this week, like, so you were really, really sick? And I'm like, no, but, you know, ethically, I can't treat you unless I'm 100%. And I wasn't 100%.
There you go. There you go. And other people might decide, hey, you know, I'm mostly good and this is my livelihood. I need to make money for my family. And they'll rationalize why it's okay to blur that line. But for people with responsibility, no, that line is there for a reason and I'm going to hold to it. It's a matter of integrity. I love that. Okay, so what I just described is the strength side. Those are the positive applications, the mature applications of that strength. The weakness side, or some of the raw side, can be that people with high responsibility, because they want to be helpful, they love helping people, they can have a hard time saying no. Somebody asks for your help, you say yes. Somebody, hey, I really need you. Okay, I'll do that. Now, they can have a hard time delegating, because their standard of quality is so high, they won't turn in something with their name on it that isn't their best work. And so if they look around and there's not a guarantee that it's gonna be as good as you could do it yourself, you just wanna do it yourself, which means you take on more work. So if you see where I'm going with this, this is where burnout happens. People with high responsibility, their self-care is the first thing to go, because they have a hard time saying no and they have a hard time delegating to other people. They also, in relationships, people with high responsibility tend to have really high expectations. And that goes both for themselves, they have high expectations for their own performance, and for others. And sometimes it can be very frustrating when other people don't share that standard of quality or that those high expectations that you have for yourself and for them. I remember an experience I had a few years ago where we had a family reunion, and one of my brothers, all of us had committed to go. One of my brothers, like the week before, a few days before the family reunion, was like, oh, we decided not to go. We're going to go to Vegas instead and visit some friends. And that really bothered some of my family who have high responsibility. They were like, wait, what? You committed to coming to this. And now you're just going to go somewhere else. And he's like, oh yeah, I just decided I didn't want to, and I'd rather do this. And to him, who has low responsibility, it was fine. It was his choice. It was his time. And the commitment didn't really matter because he changed his mind. I have new information. You know, I'd rather go to this other place. And to him, it wasn't a big deal. And so when I talk to people who have high responsibility, especially in teams, I have to remind them, not everybody has high responsibility like you. You have high expectations for yourself. Sometimes you project those expectations on others and they're going to disappoint you. If you are expecting them to do as what comes naturally to you, and we can't do that to people. We can't expect them to think the way that we think. We can't expect them to be good at something that you don't even have to try. It comes so naturally to you, you don't have to try. So to expect that of other people is unfair. So that's kind of, if we're not aware that this might be going on, that sometimes I'm applying my responsibility in a healthy and mature way, and sometimes my responsibility is getting the best of me and maybe hindering my success or relationships or self-care, that awareness is what I'm driving for in the coaching that I do with Clifton Strengths. Is step one, awareness. When is this happening in your life? Then we can talk about what do you do about it. But first it starts with, oh, you know, I just noticed after the fact sometimes, I noticed that I'm doing this thing and I think it's my responsibility. I need to be aware of that so that next time I can choose a different path if it's not helping me and it's hindering me. Sam, what are your thoughts on that real quick?
I mean, I agree. I'm just like, I feel like I'm just like a sponge, like taking it all in that you're saying. I mean, in regards to responsibility, I mean, that's why it's... I feel bad for my children because sometimes I put that expectation on them and even my husband. And this is one of those things where I'm like, gosh, where were you like in pre-marriage counseling so that he knew this before he said, I do, because I think he would just understand. And it's a legit frustration and it's hard when you care and you hold this integrity. So it's hard to come back down on the other end and understand that those people, it's just not natural for them, because it just, once again, it feels so natural. So you just feel like that's the way it is for everybody.
Yep.
And it's not, because we're all individuals.
Exactly. And that's the point. We are all individuals. And sometimes it just helps to kind of step away from your own strengths to realize that sometimes we have to extend grace to others for not having the same strengths as me. And at the same time, though, the beauty of it is that you can extend some grace to yourself when you realize that you don't have the same strengths as others and you're going to lack in areas that they're good at. And it can be really liberating when you allow yourself to do that. You know, you be good at what you're good at, and we're going to partner sometimes. I'm going to be good at what I am good at, and I'm going to help you sometimes, and you're going to help me sometimes, and we're not going to beat ourselves up for not being good at everything. And that's the beauty of teams when you apply this to teams. It's like, I'm not going to try to be everything to everybody. I'm going to be good at what I'm great at, and I'm going to look to others on my team to partner and complement me in ways that I couldn't do that as well as them. It's funny you made a comment about pre-marriage. I'm seriously considering how to put together a coaching package that other people can gift to engaged couples. I want this to be a thing, because I do think it would start your relationship off on the right foot. I think it's a beautiful concept.
Well, and the one thing I do want to say from what you were talking about is, now as you're talking about using this in a team atmosphere and playing to your strength, I think a huge component of this is, for many of us, there are some of us who have a very healthy ego and can embrace our strengths openly, but many of us are in denial about those strengths. Just as you talked about taking those top 10 and turning a lot of them very quickly into weaknesses. And it is important for us as teams that the individuals embrace their strengths so that we can all show up at our best. But that involves that confidence piece, which I think we don't talk about enough as leaders and in our culture. So I just was thinking when you said that, I was like, wow, a total light bulb just went off in my head.
Yeah. Oh, and it's so refreshing, because we're so used to in these professional settings, we're so used to building development plans around our weaknesses. It's so refreshing to have these conversations where people walk away standing taller. They're like, I'm good at some stuff. And it feels good to be recognized for what I'm good at. And when I walk through a lot of these strengths with people, I want them to feel empowered to acknowledge when they feel like one of their strengths is more on the strength side than it is on the weakness side. And I love it when people will be like, I'm doing real good at that. I don't think we need to talk a lot about this strength, because I definitely want to improve, but it's not hindering me. It's not a weakness, it's a strength. So it's like, great, how do you lean into that more? And which of these strengths would you like to repair? You feel like it's more on the weakness side. What can we do to build that up so that it's hindering you less and helping you more? That's a fun conversation when people feel good, like I have something to offer and I'm good at these things. Okay, so I want to pause real quick, because we've only talked about one strength, but one of your goals, and I think about responsibility with your personal goal of, you mentioned just being bad at organization, having a packed schedule, sometimes your self-care suffers. Like, that responsibility was immediately the strength that I thought of when I heard you talking, because that is consistent in what I see with other people who have high responsibility, is I'm the first to go because I owe it to others to serve them. And the ironic thing about it is that because you want to be helpful, because when you commit to something, you want to give 100%, you can't commit 100% to 10 different people. That's 10%. Your capacity is limited, and yet you'll take on more and more and more, and you'll expend so much of yourself that you can't. That's what's ironic about it. I want so badly to give all 10 of these people 100%. And the ironic thing is you don't give any of them 100%. None of them, their needs get met. So if you can refill your capacity, you have more to give to other people. And I know logically, people with high responsibility know that. So as you think about this goal of being a little bit more organized, taking self-care, what strikes you, or what comes to mind as you think about your responsibility as an opportunity for improvement for you?
Well, I mean, one of the best things about being so responsible is you are a mastermind at putting so much into your calendar. It's a matter of making things for you just as important on that calendar. So like, which logically I know is true, it is not as easy to do because I have been attempting. Now I will say, and I don't think this is 100% the solution, but we just got a puppy, and this week I gave myself 2-hour lunch breaks where I left the office to go hang out with the puppy. Now, granted, it's a puppy, cool. So that's kind of like taking care of an infant. So it's not 100% self-care, but it was in the right direction of me doing something that wasn't me jam-packing my schedule with the traditional sense. But yeah, I mean, I think that I have the capacity to do it, but I have to reorder the priorities in my head. Like that me is just as important as all those other people that I want to serve.
How would you even start going about doing that?
You mean like reordering in my head?
In your head, yeah.
Well,
because your head is full of habits and patterns.
Yeah.
Changing patterns and habits is hard.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the things that I have been doing, so recently just starting with medical Qigong, it's been like the last 2 years. But one of the things that really drew me to it is as a practitioner, you have to take care of yourself and practice yourself or you can't treat. Like you're just incapacitated. You can't do it. You can't show up. You can't get paid for it. And so it kind of built in that self-care. But on top of that, it's every class is like, if you are not 100%, none of this other stuff matters. And that's the truth. Like if I can't, like what you, you know, I have 10 clients a day, and I'm going to give them all 100%. But if I'm starting my day at 30%, because the whole week has been beating me down, they've all gotten subpar. And yes, it's very impressive that on 5% of Sam, you're very happy. But what would you be like if you had 100% of Sam who could be fully present in that moment? And I do have that vision has started to instill. But like you said, the habits are deeply ingrained, and I'm trying to give myself grace as I'm transitioning. And that's why it is an active goal, because I'm really trying to keep it at the forefront to actively start to shift things.
Good. One thing to think about before we talk about another strength is you don't need to do it all yourself. And I'm speaking to a person with high responsibility because you would. And the thing that is not easy to do, and that you may need to think through how to go about doing this, is acknowledging that you can have help. There are people around you who are not just willing, but are capable of helping. And sometimes it's like relinquishing control of certain things. Even just accepting the help from other people can be a huge benefit to you. You may be selective about where you let people help and how you let people help, but even just accepting the idea that I can have people help me achieve this goal. I'm not great. So I'm gonna make an assumption here that's also based on your goal. Your number 30 strength is discipline. It's right there at the bottom of your list. And it doesn't have to do with, a lot of people see this discipline strength and they think it's like, oh, I can't like hold to a diet or like a exercise regimen or something like that. That's not what discipline means. It's not like the Webster's Dictionary version of discipline. What Gallup's discipline means is these are people who are really good at planning. They're great at creating structure and frameworks and plans and putting organization into place, because they need it themselves. They like structure. They like predictability. And so they build it into their world. You have high adaptability, which is almost an opposite. There aren't really opposites in the strengths, but there are statistically unlikely strengths to show up in somebody's top five. And adaptability is somebody who's like a go with the flow personality. It's like, I just like to take things as they come. I like to live in the moment. Sometimes I won't even have a plan. Like, these are people that it's so funny to put a discipline and an adaptability in the same room, especially when they're a couple, and talk to them about their approach to vacation. The people with adaptability are like, well, let's go there and then we'll decide what we feel like doing. Doesn't that sound fun and spontaneous? And the disciplined person is like, why don't we take tons of time beforehand to map out everything we're gonna do during every hour of our vacation so that we make the most of our time there. Doesn't that sound fun? So they both have this different idea of fun based on their strengths and what makes them feel comfortable and what they enjoy. And it's just acknowledging that we come at things from a different perspective that can help us understand that. And so I think about discipline being low for you means that maybe you don't value the structure as much as somebody with high discipline, because being adaptable is kind of fun. I like the idea of going with the flow and being spontaneous and not always having a plan, which means you may need the people that you work with and people in your life to take this assessment to. And if any of them have high discipline, that's your partner. If they have discipline in their top 10, be like, hey, we need to have a planning session. I need you here with me. And all of a sudden you're kind of allowing yourself to say, I'm not great at this, but you are. Come help me. Then they feel good. You feel good and you're complimenting each other. Your responsibility can let go a little bit. And all of a sudden here, now I'm just going to point out, we're talking about practical application of strengths, right? I can partner with people who have what I lack, and they're going to help me be better at planning and putting a schedule in place and having structure that allows me to take care of myself better.
Wow.
That's a practical application of strength.
So I need what are your thoughts? Assistant that is a top strength of discipline.
Maybe.
No, but I mean, I love how you turn this almost into, when you get your results, those bottom five themes can turn into your hunt and seeking out support people to really populate your team to make sure that it's well-rounded. Granted, we're only talking about one dynamic, but you know, it should look like that. Like anytime that I've ever seen those, anything bottom in any assessment, I always internalize it into those are opportunities in me to find partners. So like, you know, I was just talking to somebody the other day, there's a personality assessment. I'm not detail oriented and I'm not organized. And so I hunt out those people almost religiously. So when someone's like irritating me because of the way they're staring at something that I've done, and I'm like, oh, yes, you irritate me, but I need you more. Like, what else can I get you involved in? And they're like, I thought that I annoy you. And I'm like, you do, but in a really good way.
But I love you too.
Yes.
But, and I appreciate your strengths. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, yes. So I love...
Time check. We got to do a time check, right? Yeah. I was just looking
at... Well, no, but I mean, this is amazing how you've talked about... I mean, yes, you kind of did a combo into two of them, but unpacking them and how much is already there. I mean, instinctively, you know, I started chuckling at the one that basically is the root cause of my goal from a personal perspective. So I guess, because I want to talk about the magic of this in teams and I want to let you rant on that. But before we do that, do you have like a strength or one of the themes that came to mind when you thought about my professional goal?
Yeah, let me take a look real quick and remind myself. Okay, so yes, your number one strength is strategic. And what I think happens with people with strategic is they don't always realize that they're doing it. It's something that's in their head. And it's sometimes hard to explain. It's another one of those examples of, I just assume everybody thinks this way. And so let's talk about it for a minute. So people with high strategic intuitively see various ways or paths to proceed. In any given moment, they can see that if we were to take this path, this is the outcome. If we were to take this path, this is the outcome. If we were to take this path, this is the outcome. And it's like chess. There are a couple moves ahead at all times, and they're intuitively recognizing the patterns and the trends in the environment around them, so that they're great predictors of where things are going. And they often can talk about intuitively knowing which path they want to take that will lead them to where they want to go. So I joke about people with high strategic being movie ruiners, because early on in the movie, they see how the director is like setting up where it's going and who the characters are. And they're like, this person did it. And everybody else in the family is like, stop it. Stop talking about where the movie's going. Because you see where it's going before it gets there. It's that seeing around corners is the other phrase that we often use to describe strategic. And I've told this story a lot with people who have strategic, because it's relevant to understand what might be going on. And it's that I had a boss years ago who had high strategic. And I would listen for her to use this phrase, the writing's on the wall. And we would be in a conversation and she'd be like, well, this is where the organization's going. I mean, the writing's on the wall. This is what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. And I would pause her. I'd have to stop her and say, okay, stop real quick. You're seeing things that you're assuming are obvious because you've pieced together things over the last few days or weeks. And to you, the writing's on the wall because of your strategic. But to the rest of us, we have no idea what you're seeing. It may have come from this email that you got the other day, or this hallway conversation that you got that you were in the other day, or you noticed this person was fired, this person was hired, this is what those roles did. So naturally, these are some org changes that are going to happen in the next couple of weeks. And so to her, it was obvious because she pieced together all of these parts. But I had to tell her, okay, now back up and take me through all of these things that went on in your head that led to where things are going. And what made you say the writing's on the wall? Because the writing's not on the wall for everybody else. You're going to have to bring us along with you. So Sam, talking about your professional goal and your strategic, the fact that this is your number one strength makes me think that you do this all the time and you will put things in motion today that are going to be something in the future. And everybody around you may not see what you see. And so if you're alone in your vision, because it's all here, and you don't bring along everybody with you, they can't help you as well as you'd like. And so sometimes it's speaking what's obvious to you and bringing other people along and verbalizing strategies that you're putting it, like, I'm making this decision today. Hey, check it out. I had this idea that I'm going to start a podcast, and this is what I think that podcast is going to do for my business. And you have it all mapped out in your head. Now you just need to put that on paper and bring other people along with you so that they can support you and help you achieve that goal. So I would be curious, if you were to think about like this rebranding and this transition that you're working on, what is your vision? Have you put it on paper? And if you were to put it on paper, would you recognize opportunities to share that with crucial partners? Or look for opportunities to partner with people who can help you get there, especially in areas where you may be lacking or weaker. What thoughts do you have as I talk that through?
Well, you know, for me, I had to like keep checking with myself, because personally I'm being moved, because it is very affirming, because that's kind of what we've been doing through the rebrand. Steph, who you met during the prep of this podcast, she is one of the first that I brought in and shared that vision with, and she joined on board for that purpose. We have other team players, and this is the first time that I actually have everyone heading in the right direction. And when I say in the right direction, I mean like we're all seeing the same thing moving forward. And I also have that support piece. So I'm learning some things. So I'm trying to balance that out. But the one thing that did come to mind to me is, I think one of my biggest hurdles is I really do view, like when I saw this list and it said strategic, I remember 2 years ago when I ran it and I said, that has to be wrong. Like, I'm not strategic, because I've had so many people in my professional past tell me that I'm not strategic. And when I would say insights, because I probably was saying the end without my winding path of how I got there, they sound so sometimes outlandish. Like, what does that even mean? And even in like an HR perspective, there would be situations that things would bubble up and I would be like, just don't even worry about it, because I would know that there's no real massive risk that was, you know, in that aspect, playing through all those things in my mindset. And then I could take something else that everyone else is like, don't worry about it. And I'm like, no, we need to worry about this. Like, this is a big, bad thing. Like, this is going to blow up into this huge thing. And even to this day, I have conversations with leaders and they're just like, I don't get it. So I'm like, well, I'm not strategic. I think I am, but I think I'm just trying to be that. So it's interesting, because I've routinely told myself that, like, that's what I aspire to be someday.
You are. You already are. So just even just what you just described is very much validation to me that you are strategic. And sometimes what's confusing about Gallup's words that they chose for the assessment is sometimes there's a Webster's dictionary version of what these words mean, and we assume that that's the same connotation, and they've changed the connotation a little bit and they've made it specific to their definition. And so you can't just assume that you know exactly what this means without reading the kind of the textbook definition of what Gallup describes them as. And strategic is one of those. It is very much an intuitive strength. If I were to come to you and say, Sam, instead of having your own podcast, I want you to co-brand with me. We're going to start a podcast together. We're going to call it this. And if I asked you that right now, would you say yes or no?
I would say I have to think about it.
You have to think about it. Yeah. Why?
Because I haven't been able to play out those. And as you were talking, I started to play out the paths. And the fact that you're cutting it off before I could really run it through makes me nervous and gives me anxiety. So I can't give a response. If you made me give a response, it probably would be like, no, because I can't figure out what the outcome would be or potential outcome could be.
And your intuition would probably be right. That's one thing that I love about people with high strategic is that oftentimes they can be presented with an opportunity or a situation. And if they have to decide now, their gut will say, I'm either going to do this thing because I sense that it brings me closer to what I want to achieve, or I'm not because I have a feeling that it's not going to get me closer to that future that I know I want to be true about my life or my business. And they may not even be able to explain why. I don't know why, but I think the answer is no. I don't think that's going to get me closer to where I want to go. It's this intuitive strength for I know whether it does or does not bring me closer to my desired future.
So I want to turn the tables on you a little bit, you know, because it is my podcast. Okay. because this is so insightful. And honestly, we could, you know, I don't know if the listeners would enjoy it, but we could have like a whole season of Micah just diving into all 34 of my strengths and what that means for me at each level. But that would probably get boring after a while. But would you really?
I would enjoy it. You and I just need to do that separately.
But I want to know, you know, we heard how you got here and what drove you to start your business. We heard whisperings of the potential that this could have with a team and the awareness with a leader. What is your vision? Like you put all this together. What is the potential you see if someone is using this tool the right way in our workplaces? What could happen? What could happen for teams? What could happen for organizations? What could happen for people and marriages? Like we've touched on all of that. So what, share with us the bigger picture.
That's beautiful. That's a beautiful question. So the goal is in an organization, we'll start with an organization, is a strengths-based culture. Taking kind of flipping on its head the development approach where we do deficiency development and we're looking at weaknesses and addressing weaknesses. What that does is it creates when it's interesting, I have a visual to describe this. So let me know if this connects or not, because I don't have the visual, you know, showing right now. If you think about an individual on a team who has five different strengths and all five of them are valuable to the team, but their own competence in those five strengths is at different levels. In one of them, they're like at a 2 out of 10. At another one, they're at a 5 out of 10. At a third one, they're an 8 out of 10. And another one, they're a 4 out of 10. So it's like out of these five, only one or two of them are they really great at. And like they're at a 7 or an 8. They're pretty high. If we focus on where they lack, the 1, 2, and 5 areas where they're lower in the 2, 3, and 4 range, we see those as low and we're like, oh, we got to make you more well-rounded. We're going to put all of our energy, time, and money into developing those. What we do is we stifle the potential for the top strengths to increase the bottom strengths to create kind of this average potential of performance. And as we do that with everybody on a team, what happens is we have a homogeneous team of well-rounded people, none of whom have really achieved their potential for excellence, and any one of them looks the same, could accomplish the same. Whereas if we were to take all of the individuals from a team and just focus on what they're best at, the 7s and 8s, and say, I'm going to invest in you to be a 9 or a 10 in these two areas where you're already really talented, all of a sudden we have a team full of people, whereas a team, we have 10s across the board. In this case, that 10 comes from Micah in this strength, but the 10 in another strength comes from Sam. And the 10 and another strength comes from Steph. So rather than being a team full of homogenous individuals, we're a team full of unique individuals who have something different to offer so that the team as a whole is high performing and we achieve greater potential for performance and success than if we were to just work on everybody becoming well-rounded. Does that make sense without my visuals?
No, yeah. That's awesome. I love that. I mean, when you talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, like that is to the forefront.
Yeah.
You know, when you someone can really show up and be themselves, embrace themselves, we develop them to fully maximize their potential and we celebrate. I mean, this is all about celebrating. I mean, like you talked about how this is a tool that makes someone more confident. They stand a little taller. You know, trust and confidence are some of the most complicated things for us to instill in cultures, and you're doing it with a tool. And I think that's awesome. I mean, more and more leaders, HR practitioners, they all want that because they don't know how to facilitate the way that, and here you are doing it and it's hitting on all these marks. So amazing.
Well, and you know what's cool about it too is that Gallup did decades of research with this and they still do today. Like when you go to Gallup's website and they mostly cater to organizations around engagement. That's their term. If we can get people engaged, engagement truly results in the kinds of KPIs and metrics that all companies care about, like job satisfaction, productivity, retention. Retention is so that turnover can be so at attrition that can be so expensive that if we can increase retention and increase job satisfaction, we keep people longer and our talent gets better for us. And engagement is directly tied to those metrics that all companies care about. And you know what's tied to engagement? It's strengths. If people know what they do well and they're given an opportunity to do what they do best every day, they love what they do and they're better at what they do, which results in engagement, which results in increased productivity and lower attrition and increased retention. It's like all the things that companies care about on the metrics side have a starting point in strengths-based development. It doesn't happen right away though, and so it kind of takes the strategic mind, somebody who's thinking about the long term and willing to invest in their people to know what they're good at and how to work better as teams.
I just love that. You just said that all the things that you're seeking, it starts in your people. Like it starts in your people. And then with a minor investment, like anything you're going to have to pay Micah to facilitate, but also for the actual assessment for what you're going to get. Like, okay, literally we're at an hour and we talked about like what, 3 or 4 of my strengths. And I probably have enough to like do self-improvement for the next 6 months on myself. You're going to get so much more than that. Plus the dynamics of it all together. So amazing. Love this work. I'm so happy that you got to be on the podcast and I got to share you with my listeners. I'm so excited for the work that you've been doing. So you have any last words that you want to say to the listeners before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I would just, I think I often think about this and like to just remind people that I guess just as I reflect on my own experience with strengths, when I was in my 20s, I felt like I needed to be good at everything. And it was my job to not be found out when I wasn't. And so I was constantly worried about letting other people see what I didn't know and letting other people see me not be good at things. And I never realized how much that was on my mind until I really got into the Clifton Strengths material and started to see the things at the bottom of my list that not only did I know I wasn't good at, but I started to not care. Like, oh yeah, I don't think like that at all. I have some strengths up here that I love about myself. And I look at my lesser strengths and I think that's just not me. And I started to become okay with that. And that's what I kind of hope for people is that they give themselves permission to be great at what they're great at and extend themselves and others some grace for being good at different things and not putting all that pressure on ourselves to be good at everything. When we have a strengths-based approach and we look at other people for their differences and truly see their differences as an advantage, we are all buoyed. We're all better for it. And so that's what I would encourage people to do with this is just become familiar with your strengths. Recognize that what comes naturally to you doesn't come naturally to others, and what comes naturally to them may not come naturally to you, and it's okay.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Micah. Thank you to everyone for listening to this episode. I have no doubt that you enjoyed it because this was freaking awesome.
Micah always offers coaching packages to apply strengths-based development principles to teams and leaders in business settings. However, he just released a new Leadership Mastermind program where leaders from various companies and industries meet monthly to discuss strengths and leadership principles with peer leaders. Sign up for the next leadership cohort by emailing coaching@michaellawrence.com. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Heart of It podcast. If you love this episode or love our podcast in general, the best thing you can do to support us is to leave a review on your favorite listening platform or share it on your favorite social media platform. Tell your connections why you love listening to the Heart of It podcast. And we are so grateful for you. Well, that's it for us this week. I'll talk to you next time. See ya.